Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
We're getting really good at that.
It's almost like we've done it 60 or 70 times right now. I wonder how many. I don't number these episodes, so I have no idea how many we've done.
Somebody knows.
But I'm sure the internet knows. Something's real. We were just talking about stuff.
All our Comic-Con videos, I want to tell people, are on the site now. So if they're, by the time they watch this,
they'll be there.
The
Flash Mob will be up by the time they watch this.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
The Akbar, both the Akbar videos, the making of, and the walk.
Really pleased with the making of. Yeah. I'm really pleased with how much detail Frank brought to it with his photos and everything.
Oh, the montage of the photos is wonderful. Jerry did a great job with that.
I want people to know how that kind of stuff really gets built.
And absolutely.
I'm really glad I'm proud of that as a piece of content.
And you know what people actually called out? Because they obviously enjoyed seeing the progression.
Yeah.
But when you're up grabbing your Master and Commander uniform and you have this rack of costumes,
yes,
they could spot the names like Vader. Vader, tell me about that. We'll tell them about that some other time.
Yeah, we should go on a tour of the costumes at some point. So this is part of I had pieces of costumes all over the place, just drifting here and there, and I didn't have a centralized way to store them. I had a clothing rack upstairs, mm-hmm, but you know, it rapidly gets filled, and then stuff falls through the cracks because a lot of costumes have props. Where do those props go? So that's me buying a bunch of nice, robust wardrobes with clear fronts on Amazon for about $10 a piece. Mm-hmm. I bought two cases of them, and I've been slowly, just every time I find a costume part, I get on a ladder and throw it in the place that it goes. And eventually my goal is to archive all of it and actually serial number it and note that what's in the collection. I have custom clothing labels I had printed up of the Adam Savage costume collection with a space for a number and the itemization and then pictures of it, because, you know, I meticulously gathered that my V for Vendetta costume has a bunch of parts, and they're all super accurate, many of them from the actual film. And so I'm the only one that knows what parts came from the real place and what parts are replicas.
It's one of those things, the other cosplayers, some people assemble their costumes and sew everything, but I've always wanted to see like a exhibit.
Yes,
like a bunch of mannequins.
Well, that is the other thing, is I want to do that at some point. Lord, I mean, what I've got here that I could just take to a gallery and put up.
Right. But it's meta exhibit, because it's not like going to the props from the movie. It's like, these are the costumes that you've made and you've worn.
Yes.
Everyone has such stories.
And for me, getting them up, getting the costumes up onto mannequins involves, so I have some mannequins. Real mannequins are a pain in the ass because they're not very poseable. They're heavy. They don't love standing up.
So the first thing we have to do is make a bunch of mannequins.
Well, so then I bought some of these cheap poseable mannequins, and the guy who makes them, they're fine, but they don't really hold up a costume. So my V for Vendetta is sitting on an expensive cloth poseable mannequin, which is more than I want to spend. I mean, they're like $700 or $800 a piece.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. I'm not going to buy a whole.
I mean, for $700, I'll just put the costume on and stand there.
But I would really like more costumes standing here, and I think I'm going to take one of the posables and hang the Rocketeer in full backpack mode here
in flight
up on up.
Have
in
him
the
ride the
workshop.
Hammerhead.
Oh God, that's a great idea. Actually, what I really should do is Slim Pickens should ride.
There you
the
go.
Hammerhead.
Slim Pickens should ride the Hammerhead.
Oh, that's wonderful.
By the way, we were talking about Kubrick last time.
Yeah.
I meant to mention that Peter Sellers famously plays three roles in Doctor Strangelove. He plays the British commander. He plays Doctor Strangelove.
He plays the British commander, who's the liaison at the base where, I can't remember the character's name. It's a good name.
Where Jack D. Ripper goes crazy.
Right, Jack Ripper goes crazy.
He also plays Doctor Strangelove,
right,
the German scientist working for the military government, and he also plays Merkin Muffley, the president of the United States.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
The bald.
Yeah.
Now,
that makes sense.
Dimitri, one of our commanders went funny in the head. That's all Peter
Sellers. That's all Peter Sellers.
He was supposed to play the Slim Pickens role.
Really?
Kubrick wanted him in each of the major sequences of the movie. He wanted Sellers to be in each of them, and really wanted him to play the Slim Pickens role. he didn't want to play it. Apparently, he didn't really feel like he could get the Southern drawl.
Yeah, the Texas, that was, Slim Pickens did a real specific Texas accent there.
And Slim Pickens is, I submit, we're all the better for it. Slim Pickens is, it's his defining role, and it's an unbelievable role.
Look at Slim Pickens' filmography sometime. just come back in like 4 hours when you're done.
I know.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's a mile long.
He's the Ernest Borgnine of his time.
That's good. I like that. I was actually saying when I showed my kids The Professional, we talked about that last time too, Danny Aiello was there. And I wanted to say to my kids, Danny Aiello is the proto James Gandolfini.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
There's a character actor episode here at some
totally.
Point. Like we should. I'll put that in the back pocket.
Well,
for
remember,
later.
HeyIt'sThatGuy.com?
No.
Oh yeah, it was Hey It's That Guy. Was part of Fame Tracker, Two Stars One Slot, and Damn Hell Last Kings. It was this whole web ring of movie self reference. HeyIt'sThatGuy.com was we like you know they would point out that Joe Don Baker was the early. Hey, it's that guy who was in everything. And then after that, it was J.D. Walsh.
Okay.
Who played one of the killers in Sling Blade and has been in everything until he died. But then there was Two Stars, One Slot, which was one of my favorite websites that would always take two actors that played the same roles.
Like
and
that.
So they would do things like Chris Sarandon and Michael Nouri.
I don't know who either of those people are.
Okay, so Chris Sarandon played King Humperdinck. Prince Humperdinck in
okay.
The Princess Bride.
Okay.
And Michael Nouri is the love interest from Flashdance. And if you actually look through their filmographies where they play bosses and dads and older boyfriends, they are almost always playing roles that could either actor could grid right onto it. So they have a fight as to who does that one role better.
That's perfect. I miss that internet. That was a fun internet.
Yeah, totally. So where were we?
So I want to talk about Comic-Con as a way to talk about comic books.
Oh.
So let's just talk about comic books.
Okay.
I was a late entry to comic books. My father had a big box of like 50s era Batman's Detective Comics, I guess, and stuff like that, that were, you know, had been obviously much loved and read as a child.
Yeah.
But like, I lived in a rural area, so I didn't have a corner store I could go down and pick up the weekly comic books at. I don't think they even sold them in the grocery store, which is weird, I guess. So I didn't really get into comics until I was an adult, fully like the Watchmen. Somebody loaned me a copy of Dark Knight Rises, and I was like, "This is amazing! Why have I not been
Returns?"
Sorry. See, I told you I'm terrible at this.
Well, Dark Knight Returns, Dark Knight Rises is the last.
No, Dark Knight Strikes Again.
Dark Knight Strikes Again. Yeah, sorry. I read some of the horror comics that you could get back in the 70s, and you know, had that kind of stuff. But it wasn't until I was 18, living in New York, and my best friend David introduced me to The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And that led me to, I have in my collection everything Frank Miller has ever written.
Even the new Holy the War one?
No, I update it about every year.
Okay.
I'll go to the comic book store and I'll just be like, what don't I have? And I'll just get it and then spend a couple of days reading it all. But most of it in its original form as well as its digested graphic novel form. So the original Ronins, Elektra Assassin,
okay,
which is done with Bill Sienkiewicz and one of the best graphic novels ever written.
Mm-hmm.
Am I given to hyperbole? The answer is yes.
there's a penchant for that around the table.
So Frank Miller is I'm huge on Frank Miller. Just I love all of them. Alan Moore as well.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. Sandman.
Early adopter of Sandman.
Sandman was one of those things that when I picked up a trade and I read the first like four pages. And by the time I got to the end of the first issue in the trade, I was on Amazon and I ordered all the absolutes that existed to date. And like, I just sit through and I mean, they're just gorgeous. They're
amazing.
Have you
seen the compendium now? The big
so that's the absolute
box set.
So,
absolutes
are DC's.
Oh, right.
They
right.
blow it up because the comics are drawn at the big, at that size.
When they
do
they recolor? Like there's the
they
coloring is better on that.
There's sometimes
it seems like,
Or they'll recolor time it because like the color timing the color
as we've established
so the funny thing is we've talked about movies a lot on this podcast and we're all big movie buffs but there's a huge parallel in the way you ingest movies and comics, and also the way those industries have like tier, you know, different genres and highbrow, lowbrow,
and these are genres that get translated between each other mm-hmm. a lot, and yeah. between when we're all readers as well, between books, mm-hmm. and they're all incredibly different mediums. I know that's like tautologically almost stupid to say, but like there are things that you could tolerate from a comic book, from the layout of a comic book, ridiculous bits of dialogue that you couldn't hear anyone say.
It's like video games.
Yes, that work within that yeah. format that can't work within any other.
But people
format.
Try.
They do. Holy yeah. Rusted Metal Island, Batman.
Well, and you know.
Thanks, Joel Schumacher.
Did he actually say that?
Fuck in Batman yes. and Robin.
Rusted
Batman
Forever. Metal
holy
Island.
Rusted Metal Island, and it's a.
It's holy. It's
it
full
is
of holes.
A island that is full of holes.
No, yeah, best know, not remembered.
I heard an interview with Schumacher.
He should have just apologized for hours.
He was on Terry. Actually, you got to listen to a recent interview with Schumacher on Terry
Fresh
Gross.
Air,
and it was he made a beautiful little movie with Colin Farrell,
Phone Booth,
yeah.
Before that,
oh,
he made a little movie about Colin Farrell being with a bunch of military recruits in the South. It's a very little movie, and it's a post Batman film, and it is. It's Schumacher saying, I'm sorry, I kind of lost my mind there
penance.
For a little bit.
He should do some more penance.
Well, he did, and he actually quoted Harry Knowles from Ain't It Cool saying, someone needs to give Joel Schumacher a smack. And Schumacher was like, I agree. I needed a smack back then. I don't know why I put nipples on the bat suit.
Oh, that was the least of the crimes. I mean, let's be honest. Okay, anyway, right, sorry.
I'm putting it yeah. back into focus.
Sorry, that was my bad.
So the comic books you guys all mentioned, and a lot of people did start with Frank Miller and Alan Moore with Dark Knight Rises, and that was yeah. a big turning point in the late 80s, or late 80s or mid 80s?
It was
in
late.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the tone of comics.
Right.
Well, there was it was more adult. I mean, there was violence, there was language.
Right. It was highbrow. Comics went highbrow.
Well, but Watchmen predates that by a few years, right?
By a few years, yeah. yeah. And I mean, Watchmen was the sea change, I think.
Yeah. In terms of popular culture, people weren't aware of that at all.
Right, right.
At the time.
In the early 90s, when comics were flourishing and people were doing, you know, a million number ones and you'd sell a million issues on a comic book right. every month. That's insane. Batman doesn't sell 100,000 copies on a good month. The kids, as I was back then, we read the Spider-Mans and yeah. the Spawns, and that was the world of comic books. But it's like movies. You can go back and you can read in the classics yeah. and have appreciation for this lineage and for the diversity of comics.
Yeah. My sister gave me a lot of early advice about comics to read. She is an avid comic book reader. She manages a climbing gym in back east.
Okay.
Totally like talked to me about the joys of serial reading stuff every month, and you know,
Well, they're like soap operas.
Yeah.
I mean, it is all character.
One writer said, all that matters is the first page and the last page of a comic book.
Really?
Yeah, because the cliffhanger grim. And then that first page, the monthly comic
book,
yeah,
the payoff. Do you remember when Hard Boiled came out with Frank Miller's comic, 3-issue comic with Jeff Darrow?
No.
So, is it Jeff Darrow? It is Jeff Darrow.
They'll let you know if you're wrong. Don't worry.
The illustrator of Hard Boiled is a fantastic 3-issue motherfucker of a comic. It's totally amazing. And super dense visually. The illustrator ended up being one of the key illustrators for The Matrix.
Mm.
And it's totally clear that that visual okay. style is all there. It's layered in pieces
the weird
of detritus
symbology
and all sorts of stuff going
yeah.
on. But there was this massive delay between issues 2 and 3. Because you thought it was going to be 4 issues, and then, you know, it was like almost a year had elapsed, and you were going and finding out, no, it's delayed another month, and the cover of the third one is a picture of the lead character, I believe with his foot crushing a car, holding a gun, saying, sorry, I'm late.
That's
it was
great.
This great conversation between the author and
oh, that's
the
fantastic.
That's actually very characteristic of these highly anticipated comic books, the event books now these days, that some get delayed months and months. But I also like that some series, some of the best ones are this books that are only going to last a year. They're only going to be 12 issues.
Right, right,
the
right.
The maxi series. For example, just like if you watch like a BBC television show, you know they're not going to drag it on forever. You're going to have the story.
Three episodes of Sherlock.
Maybe a year or two, and that's it. And then you can buy the compendium.
I will also say that I grew up with comics being a key part of my childhood because my dad was obsessed with early American comics. And so I, early on, was deeply inculcated with things like Crazy Cat, drawn by George Harriman in the teens and 20s and 30s, and is one of the most beautiful comics. Super surreal. Harriman spent a ton of time in the American Southwest. They're semi-mystical, but totally absurdist, almost like surrealist.
So is that in like the American Splendor, R. Crumb days?
No, long before.
Even before the war.
Long before. And totally influenced. I mean, if you talk to Art Spiegelman, you talk to Chris Ware, you talk to Dan Klaus, they would all say Crazy Cat is a primordial and vital influence, just alongside Winsor McCay, Little Nemo, and all of that early early American Sunday spread stuff.
Pre-superhero
business.
Absolutely,
yeah. So I grew up with that. I also grew up, strangely, one of my dad's best friends growing up was the art director of The New Yorker.
Oh.
And so I grew up with a lot of New Yorker cartoonists like William Steig and Sompe and Roz Chast and folks like that coming over for dinner. In fact, one of my parents, in the house I grew up in for the longest time, in the bathroom, all the art in one of the downstairs bathrooms was birthday cards to my folks from New Yorker cartoonists.
Wow.
It was like the coolest art collection.
That's fantastic.
I know, totally awesome.
And a lot of modern day New Yorker artists, cartoonists, they have graphic novels too. Like
yeah.
And there are a lot of people who are big in the zine world.
Mm-hmm.
Adrian Tomine, and if you go to like place like Comic-Con, and you know it's kind of divided. You have your movie section, you have your pop culture pop comic section. There's this middle section with graphic novels. And you have publishers, I forget their names now, but you can buy, you know, like things like Blankets and stuff like that. These big tomes that are just their stories told in graphic novel form, but they might as well be novels.
Well, and you know, last year, a couple of years ago, a friend of mine took me to the real Comic-Con, which is, you know, there's a lot of famous people there and there's a lot of big studios pushing a lot of big stuff. But the artists and the writers of comic books are still there, and you can go meet them all. So, and when they leave their booth, almost nobody knows who they are.
It's like Chasing Amy. Like you walk in, and there's all the big spectacle stuff, and then there's at the end, there's rows and rows of tables, and there's like one person sitting at each 4-foot area,
and they'll sit there and sign and draw and sketch
your book.
I mean, right? You buy a book, and the guy will say, "Hey, you like this?" It's like, "Yeah, I love the series." And well, the guy who wrote it and drew it's right down there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Talk to him about
amazing.
It. It's like, oh.
That's really cool about Comic-Con. I love that.
Well, and a lot of Comic-Cons are like that. I can't remember Derek Robinson, who drew Transmetropolitan, which is one of my all-time favorites.
I don't know it.
Oh, good grief.
It's written by Warren Ellis.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's about a future techno.
It's Hunter Thompson in the year 3000.
Ah.
Right, so
I'm a huge. Have we talked? We haven't talked about.
No,
Hunter
we. Can, that's a whole other episode. Let's put that in your pocket now.
And Hunter Thompson bookmark.
The Spider Jerusalem is the guy's name, and
that is a great name.
But anyway, so Derek Robinson. Somebody asked him on Twitter, and this is one of the other great things about comics is many of the artists and writers are accessible on Twitter,
right.
And they're just normal people. They don't have massive followings. Mm-hmm. People have conversations with them about the stuff that they make and don't. And as long as you're kind of respectful and nice, then they're there. But somebody asked him if Comic-Con was ruined because it was so big, and if you can have a big con that's just about comics. And then he listed two or three like Emerald City and HeroCon and some stuff like that are very much.
Much more about
big
the comics.
Big con about comics that are not Comic-Con.
Right.
Anyway, that's all I was saying. Transmetropolitan's rad. You should totally read that.
I will totally.
The other one that I know fell in the there'll be water if God wills it kind of way they come when they come was Planetary.
Same writer. So it's Warren Ellis, 26 issues, and that's the one that came out a year. Like it took five years to come out. And the idea is that it's set in this like a universe that where other superheroes live.
It's a metaverse kind of.
It's about people who are archaeologists of pop culture of the 20th century. So a secret organization, and they study artifacts like Godzilla and the myths of like Hong Kong revenge dramas. And I think you really
like
it.
But it's a universe where that stuff's real.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's very meta and weird. And Warren Ellis is great.
Who else that I have a complete collection of? Actually, I think right over there is Mobius.
Okay.
Jean Giraud, Mobius, the French comic artist whose work as he is effectively the production designer of The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
And beautiful, beautiful stuff. He designed the spacesuit from Alien, and his comic books are super surreal.
I can only imagine, yeah.
Really trippy, can be quite sexual and mature themed, but, you know, discussing facets of human sexuality, just peculiar and strange and really wonderful.
So when if you go to a comic book store and you're looking for recommendations or you're browsing the shelf, what jumps out at you and what are you likely to buy?
I shop at Comics Experience on Divisadero as I have for freaking 25 years. I love those guys. And, you know, I will go and see what's new for Frank Miller. I really like... You know, I look for artists that I really like. I'm a huge fan of Chris Ware. I have a ton of his stuff. I'm a huge fan of Dan Klaus. Dan's local. Dan's over in Oakland.
I think he pops up at Ape pretty frequently, the Alternative Press Expo.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm adding money to my meter. I apologize.
Also, Bill Senkovich, the illustrator.
You follow artists and writers.
I look for very specific things. And just like movies... I'm not interested in just pretty stuff. Oh, I also love all of the Joss Whedon Buffy stuff. I think is fantastic.
I never read any of that.
They're really great.
I should really go watch Buffy.
They pick up where Buffy left off. They take Buffy to places that no one would ever spend the money to do on television. Yeah.
Okay. So he also wrote Joss Whedon wrote a lot of comics before.
Yes.
It was kind of his downtime before doing Avengers and stuff. And he did a long X-Men run. That they took for X-Men 3, but it kind of gave him that huge credibility.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the other thing. We've talked about a lot of graphic novels, but I also love going in and taking characters that everybody knows at this point, because even when you get down deep into the Marvel pantheon, into like Daredevil and stuff like that, you still know Daredevil, and you can come in and jump into that. If there's a particularly good arc, you can jump in and read a 12 or 13 issue arc of that story, and then. And then, you know, you can choose to keep going if you want, or you can let that go.
And like I said, I fall in love with authors, so I love the Daredevil, all of Frank Miller's Daredevil arcs, you know, that started with, you know, that introduce you to Elektra, et cetera. So, yeah, I read Why the Last Man, the first couple of issues on the recommendation of my cameraman on Mythbusters.
So it's great.
Brian K. Vaughan, writer, great comic book writer, he actually worked on Lost for one season.
Oh, wow.
And he's the lead.
Hold on, yeah, which season?
Fifth season.
Oh.
Which is how many seasons were total?
Six. He worked on the good season.
The penultimate season.
The penultimate season, which was the best season.
That's before they got to the temple in the middle of the island?
That was sixth season. No. and he's also the showrunner on Stephen King's Under the Dome.
What's that?
He's the lead writer on Stephen King's Under the Dome. He wrote the pilot episode. Great comic book writer. He also did this series called Ex Machina about the mayor of New York who can talk to machines. And big twist in issue one is he stopped the second plane in 9/11, which was crazy.
Wow, as alternate history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's intense.
So there are a lot of like modern comic book writers who do like
Garth
dip their hands in everything,
right?
Who write comic books and then also do TV shows and then have movies and stuff like that. And
well, it's kind of a thing that it seems like it's a medium where there's enough stuff happening at any given time that if you are a movie director into movies or into comics and you want to come in and write something like Green Arrow for a while, totally can.
Yeah, it does seem to accommodate that quite well. And I think that earlier I was saying about the translation between comic books and novels and movies, that comic books and movies are much more aligned in terms of a plot that's driven by both the visual and the written.
Right. You don't, in a novel, you can write what the character's thinking. In a comic book or a movie, you cannot.
Well, there is. That's actually where Elektra Assassin.
There's the classic box with. With thoughts.
The Elektra Assassin, the main character Elektra, speaks three words in the whole graphic novel.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I need to read this.
It's so good. And she just, the rest of the time, she says things like, the man next to me is only pretending to sleep. His death can wait. Or, the man is bone and jelly. I need only push one into the other.
Grim.
Yeah, such good writing.
Frank Miller is a little crazy, too. I mean,
well, he's gone a little conservative crazy.
Well, I think he's always been a little conservative crazy. It's now coming out.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
I think of Frank Miller, you know, in The Simpsons when they picture Matt Groening as like the crazy conservative, like, get off my lawn. I have a couple of shots. That's what I think Frank Miller is.
That's
you
can funny.
Set, but you like with
Matt Groening's totally not like that.
No, I can't imagine he is.
But with every writer and artist, you can separate the person from the work.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely. And yeah. And Frank Miller did 300.
Mm-hmm. Great. Ronin.
Sin City and Ronin and Dark Knight, and he's written a ton of comic books.
There's a new one, Leonidas, right? Leonidas was after 300.
So there's that new movie coming out.
Yeah.
It's 300.
You mean The Immortals?
No.
Do you know Sarah Silverman's joke about 300, why it's called that?
No.
It's on a scale of 1 to 10 how gay it is.
Pretty good joke.
That's Sarah Silverman joke.
I read an early review of 300, which, by the way, I loved and is totally indefensible.
Yeah.
Right? But I read an early review on the web of it that said, I like this movie, but there's a little too much dudity in it. And I have never read that word before.
It's
you have proto Michael Fassbender in that movie.
Proto Michael Fassbender, wow. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that.
Play Steelios.
Swords and Sandals movies are hard to defend. Just we talked about Spartacus last week.
Yeah, yeah.
Ben-Hur. All those movies. I love those movies. But
Troy?
Yeah.
Troy has some fantastic sword fights for being a plodding and exhausting film.
Is Troy the Brad Pitt one?
Yeah.
Okay. Troy, I don't know that I ever saw that.
He's great in that.
Oh, there's some. He is great in it. Great. You know, those actors like him, big movie stars, can often play immortal type
larger
heroes
than life.
Perfectly, yeah. Yeah. Right?
Like, Gladiator.
Like Keanu was born to play Neo and Siddhartha, right?
Yeah, yeah. I give him Johnny, Johnny Utah?
Yeah.
Johnny Utah is, I mean, actually Keanu's had like 5-6 roles that were perfect for him.
Totally. He's got a Harrison Ford kind of spread in terms of like
yeah, really.
Iconic franchise making roles that are awesome.
Back to comics.
Yeah.
Okay,
comic books.
So we're going to talk about From Hell?
Point Break?
Yeah, no. But he did Constantine, which was not a good movie. Yeah,
I loved Constantine.
Oh, I loved the production design of Constantine.
Yeah, it was very pretty.
Who did?
I love the production design
yes,
of Constantine.
Yes, I loved Hell. I loved that weird Frenchman from Fargo who plays the devil in Constantine.
Oh, he's also in Minority Report. No,
really?
No.
Is he the eyeball guy?
He's the doctor in Minority Report, which is the one.
He's not French at all.
Is he not? I always think of him as French because he plays the creepy Frenchman in Fargo.
But he plays the devil. He's
I guess
so
that's
good
your
as
partner in that's your partner in the wood chipper.
Oh, he's such a creepy deep.
Totally. Like he's also the villain in 8mm.
Oh, that movie!
The Nicolas Cage snuff movie.
That movie is real weird.
Never saw it.
Oh, you should watch that. It's real
I'm
weird.
I'm not sure I should.
No, it's real weird. You should watch it. Comics.
Comics.
We have recommendations for people, and we'd love to get recommendations. That's a good place to.
Yeah. Norm putting a bow
nice.
On the whole thing.
Oh,
that was nicely
you know
done.
What? Sorry, I wanted to say this, but you mentioned we all talked about Watchmen. It's hard to overstate Alan Moore's import. Within modern comics.
Also,
highbrow graphic novel, et cetera.
That and the first series of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen are both amazing.
Totally.
First two series.
And V for Vendetta. Mm-hmm.
From Hell.
From Hell. So something I was reading, was I reading it? No. This is a shitty segue. It was when I was interviewing Neil Gaiman on stage, he told me this story. There you go.
Okay.
What an asshole. Yeah. Neil told me that he and I were talking about taking time for your fans. And it is always a push-pull when you're a public personality. And Neil said that he was incredibly inspired and early formed by Alan Moore, who we think of now as a kind of a crazy genius,
hermit.
Right? A hermetic crazy genius.
Yeah.
Neil makes the point that he has never seen anyone who is more generous with his fans than Alan Moore.
Wow.
Drawing and writing and talking to them and spending time validating and conversing and just being super, super present, that he's never seen anything like it.
Well, and just to be clear, Neil is one of those people that when you go to a signing, he'll be there until 2 o'clock in the morning if that's how so long gracious. It takes to get the last person signed.
When I saw him at Comic-Con, we were eating and talking about what he's been doing, and he said, I just signed 40,000 books.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he is, and
he's that was over a 1 month book tour.
Novels, comics, the biography that he did as a 19-year-old about Douglas Adams, everything he's ever done is worth reading.
Yeah. And always. He's annoyingly prolific and
I mean, ridiculous.
Just short stories.
Mention that he's also a sweetheart?
Yeah, well, like, we read his kid's book.
Yeah.
It's like the good night story for the baby every night.
The skeleton book?
No, True Story. The skeleton book's a little early. Graveyard book. No, True Story is a story about a panda that when she sneezes, bad things happen. When he sneezes, bad things happen. So it tells the story of Chu. This book is fantastic. If you have a kid, it's a great goodnight story because it ends with the end of Tuesday, and he says goodnight, and you say goodnight, and then you turn off the light and put the kid to bed.
So I'm going to make the case that those who are into comic books out there should look up Crazy Cat.
Okay.
K-R-A-Z-Y-K-A-T, George Harriman, and really revel in the beautiful framing and surreal changes of decor and landscape from frame to frame, like I said, inspired by the Southwest and inspiring to a whole generation of really important comic book writers like Art Spiegelman, who did Mouse, and Dan Clowes and Chris Ware. All of their surrealist aspects, all of their comics deeply informed by that kind of early 20th century stuff.
That's fantastic.
So, so
we're in the recommendations phase.
Let's do some unconventional recommendations like that. There's a comic book called Habibi by Craig Thompson. He did Blankets, and he released this 2 years ago. It's this big book. It is nothing like Blankets at all, but the art is great. He does brush inking.
Oh, wow.
And it's wonderful.
I'm also a big fan of Mike Mignola. I've read almost everything he's ever written. Creator and he's really good at delegating the writing and the character development to others and supervising that sort of stuff. And so the whole Hellboy, BPRD, Lobster Johnson universe is one that there's endless amounts of material to dive into.
It just keeps, you keep going deeper and deeper. My favorite series is probably Preacher. If you've not read that, it's Garth Ennis wrote it. I think they had multiple people drawing over the years, but it is grim and dark and awful, and it's for adults only. If you're under 30,
the Vertigo,
you shouldn't DC read line. It. And then Transmetropolitan is amazing. Transmetropolitan is my all-time favorite of anything.
Excellent.
I think.
Preacher is about a preacher wanting to earth with this a vampire, and he has the word of God that can make people do things.
Preacher is supernatural and very gritty and raw and awful things happen to awful people. It's real good.
Robert Kirkman. Got to give a shout out to his stuff. He writes without ends, like for Robert Kirkman, the Walking Dead creator.
Oh, okay.
So Walking Dead has been going on forever, and he has basically his own label of comic books.
I think
now.
People know who. I think we're good. I think people. Walking Dead is a safe thing to recommend.
Not The Walking Dead. All his other stuff is excellent.
All right, and I'm sure we're going to get a bunch of recommendations.
Yeah, post stuff
from
the comments, and we'll grab some stuff, read it, come back and talk about it at some point in the future, I'm sure. And that'll do it for us this week. As always, if you like or dislike or just want to talk about something random, post a comment, leave a review on iTunes, whatever. All the iTunes stuff, I hate to ask for it every week, but the iTunes stuff is leaving a review on iTunes is the biggest way.
It means the world to us.
Yeah. It helps us get the word out to other people because iTunes uses that to rate people. So that's how you end up seeing us up on the list with This American Life and other crazy stuff on the top list at iTunes. So we really appreciate that. And if you have negative feedback, let us know because we want to know. If you care enough about the show to tell us that we're doing a good job or a bad job, please leave feedback. We appreciate
it. Thank you. Yes.
Exactly. And we'll be back next Tuesday with another episode. See you guys then. No one knows if life was gonna be this way. Yeah. See that is to me as Cheers is to Norm as Cheers is to me the sitcom that you were too young for.
Oh.
And for you it's probably Mary Tyler Moore.
Mary Tyler Moore was
Dick
just
Van Dyke
slightly
show.
Before my time. So not slightly. Petticoat Junction was definitely before my time.
Okay.
I grew up on Happy Days, Mary Tyler Moore. Bob Newhart was a little bit old for me when I was a young kid.
The 70s Bob Newhart, not Newhart.
Yeah, no, the original Bob Newhart.
Yeah, the new,
although the new one had the greatest series ender of all time.
Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. It's all a dream.
When he wakes up
with Suzanne Plachette.
Yeah.
And it's all a dream.
Yeah.